And welcome back to the Reporter's File, everyone. We'll kick off this segment with a report on Ramadan in a former Soviet republic, and then we'll move on to Afghanistan and how Ramadan is observed there. And after that, we're going to move on to a report on a 1988 genocidal campaign ordered by Iraq's executed former dictator Saddam Hussein. Do stay with us. We'll begin in Ukraine. The around 1 million Muslims living in the country are also marking Ramadan this year. In a non-Muslim post-Soviet state, it's not always easy to preserve Ramadan traditions. But despite that, the Muslim leaders in Ukraine continue their efforts to share knowledge about Islam.
Oleg and Maria are a typical Ukrainian couple. Maria meets her husband after a long working day. Usually she invites him for dinner. However, today it will be only in a few hours. Oleg and Maria are fasting.
The last 2 years it's been difficult for me to fast during Ramadan. But this year I was on Hajj to Medina. That energy I've got there when I saw millions of Muslims praying together makes me feel absolutely different during this Ramadan.
Oleg converted to Islam 3 years ago. Being totally disappointed in Christian church, he started to study various Islam literature. However, when he took in the hands of the Holy Quran, it became a revelation for him.
I read a lot of books on philosophy and had a lot of questions. Only Quran laid down the mosaic of my knowledge. Quran inspired me and I understood that I am on the right way. It let me understood that this is the only truth.
Oleg's conversion to Islam encouraged his wife. In a few months, Maria followed in her husband's footsteps.
Though Ukraine has its native Muslim population, the society is not always ready to accept the fact that Ukraine is not a Christian state only. Thus, Ukrainians who convert to Islam may be mistreated.
It was a tough psychological test, says Maria, to start wearing hijab in a non-Muslim society. A lot of her friends turned back on her.
It was not a question of my new look, but my inner changes. Suddenly, I couldn't go to many places where my friends and I used to spend time. I didn't want to discuss certain issues, so we lost touch. But God sent us a lot of new nice people instead.
For Oleg's family, as well as for around 1 million of Muslims here, Ramadan is a special time. Though many of them are far away from native countries, they carefully guard the traditions of Ramadan.
During Ramadan, Muslims become more generous and practice being more patient. They abstain from food, drink, and other physical needs. However, being a time of purifying the soul, refocusing on God and self-discipline, Ramadan is much more than just not eating or drinking.
The Muslim spiritual leaders in Ukraine do their best to make people deeply understand the meaning of Ramadan for Muslims.
The spirit of Ramadan is an attempt to make all the good deeds, to show your desire to do it, and to show your devotion to God.
For 70 years, the Soviet anti-religious propaganda has been ruining Islam in Ukraine. The country still lacks enough mosques. There is only one in the country's capital, Kyiv, and several prayer halls. One of them met the month of Ramadan under Rupia. However, even such difficulties can't tame the spirit of the Ukrainian Muslims. They are trying to rebuild mosques and to share knowledge among Ukrainian Muslims.
During Ramadan, Muslim communities here invite guests from abroad to deliver lectures and to recite the Quran. All the 8 scientists expected to come this year are the graduates of the famous Islamic University Al-Azhar in Egypt.
It is a first visit to Ukraine for Sheikh Mahmoud Al-Hars. He says he was impressed by the Muslim communities in Ukraine.
Since my first day in Ukraine, I have been treated nicely. While the first prayer, I've noticed that Muslims in Ukraine are very solid and Islam here is on the rise.
July and August are considered to be the hottest months in Ukraine. Along with the late sunsets and early sunrises, it turned fasting in a serious physical test.
Ukrainian Muslims have been waiting for the sunset for 16 hours. This is the particularity of Ramadan in Ukraine, a very long period of daylight. However, Ukrainian Muslims believe that this trial makes them stronger.
Every evening, the mosque is overcrowded by people who speak different languages.
The iftar menu is as multicultural as Ukrainian Muslims. Arab, Azeri, Iranian or Tajik, all these communities want to present their culinary art, turning each fasting Muslim on a gastronomical tour.
For Ezer Iftar were expected 300 people, however it was twice as much guests. 15 cooks have been sweating over the menu to provide enough food for everyone.
We cooked the sweet pilau and so-called cabbage rolls stuffed with lamb. But for me it is not so important what dishes to eat. I admire the atmosphere when we cook all together and having dinner together as well.
Marie is cooking dinner for her children. She says that it is not easy to smell the food. Her two boys are too young for fasting, but Marie is sure one day all her family will fast together, and in modern Ukraine her children will have an opportunity to convert to Islam much earlier than she and her husband did. Дар'я Дігуц, Press TV, Kyiv.
Our next stop, Afghanistan, and the report by Press TV's Amin Olami on how Afghans are observing the Holy Month despite the ongoing war and a sizzling hot weather.
In Islamic calendar, Ramadan is the ninth month and is called the month of fasting and improving of brotherhood among Muslims around the world. Here in Afghanistan, people celebrate the month for many reasons. In their eyes, fasting is the best choice to be more healthy. They also believe Ramadan is a holy month, since in it the first verses of the Holy Quran were revealed to the Islamic prophet.
This man is a university student. He is so happy as the month of Ramadan has arrived. Though he must stop drinking and eating for 16 hours daily, he also must study hard to pass the tests in university. He believes that God will help him and that he is fasting as it's one of his main responsibilities as a Muslim.
I am feeling strong with the fast. When I am not eating and drinking, I can learn very good without any problem, and I am feeling very well.
Afghan people have their own traditions to celebrate this month. After 16 hours of fasting, they break their fast with local dishes, fruits, tea and vegetables, a meal called iftar. Besides this, supporting of the poor people has been known as one of the most important responsibilities of rich Muslims. This can involve buying new clothes, shoes and other items of need. There is also a social aspect involving the preparation of special foods and inviting people for iftar.
We have prepared a local meal that is called shorba, and we have invited some of our relatives for this, and we have made an iftar for them. And after the meal, after iftar, we are going to masjid for offering the prayer of Laylatul Qadr.
Let's do not forget that fasting from dawn to dusk is not the only message of Ramadan, as there are severe rules to be in a real fast. Purity of both thoughts and actions is important. The act of fasting is said to redirect the heart away from worldly activities, its purpose being to cleanse the inner soul and free it from harm. It also teaches Muslims to practice self-discipline, self-control, sacrifice and empathy for those who are less fortunate, thus encouraging actions of generosity and charity.
You know that a specific we cannot say just we take just we stop our drinking and just stop with drinking and eating. In the Ramadan, all our body must take a fast. Eyes, nose, ear, everything.
Muslims should start observing the fasting ritual upon reaching the age of puberty, so long as they are healthy, sane and have no disabilities or illnesses. The elderly, the chronically ill and the mentally ill are exempt from fasting, but whoever is sick or on a journey can break their fast.
Based on Sharia law, those who are ill and have a journey are not expected to fast. Almighty God has exempted them from fasting, but it's an exception.
Based on Islamic tradition, in addition to fasting, Muslims are encouraged to read the entire Quran. The entire Quran would be completed at the end of the month. Ramadan is also a time when Muslims are to slow down from worldly affairs and focus on self-reformation, spiritual cleaning and enlightenment. This is to establish a link between themselves and God through prayer, supplication, charity, good deeds, kindness and helping others.
This is the confidence and this is the unity of Muslim people. They have one ideology, and a specific ideology they have against of their a specific in the side of their God and their prophet. And because of that we celebrate this one, because of confidence and because of we need the spiritual. Just because of that we celebrate this action.
During Ramadan, there are three holy and great nights known as Laylat al-Qadr, and it means the nights of destiny, as well as Muslims believe the first verses of the Quran were revealed to the Islamic prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, during Laylat al-Qadr. Muslims believe that the God has called these nights in Holy Quran the nights of blessing and peace. That is why millions of Muslims around the world, like these people, observe the nights of glory or Laylat al-Qadr to make their ties closer with Almighty God.
Whatever you say, God will hear. He will give you answer back. It doesn't matter. Soon or later, you will get your answer. But it depends. You want it or not. It's your choice.
Life for an ordinary Afghan is difficult. Poverty is acute, unemployment is high, life expectancy is short, and insecurity is everywhere to see. But in these circumstances, people have found their religious values and rituals as a safe haven of whose outward manifestation they have been deprived for many years. Amin Alami, Reporters File, Kabul.
In comparison to other global atrocities, the world still knows very little about the 20th century Kurdish genocide. The Kurdistan region's government is trying to raise the issue in Britain's parliament to achieve global recognition for the attack. And the families of the victims say the issue of compensation also requires further attention. Dale McEwen has more from Erbil in the semi-autonomous Kurdistan region.
Chemical weapons, firing squads, and mass graves, these were just some of the methods used in the Kurdish genocide from 1963 to the late 1980s. Hundreds of thousands of Kurdish men, women and children were murdered during attempts to exterminate Kurds in Iraq. Former Iraqi President Saddam Hussein's regime spearheaded the latter part of the ethnic cleansing program in the 1980s with alleged assistance from terrorist anti-Iranian group known as the Mujahideen Khalakh organization. But little is known of the Kurdish genocide outside of Kurdistan, especially in the West. Efforts are now underway to raise awareness of the genocide through a series of international events and parliamentary meetings. The Kurdistan Regional Government launched an online petition in March calling on the British government to recognise the atrocity as genocide. 100,000 British citizens need to sign the petition to activate a debate in the British Parliament. The long-term aim is to encourage the United Nations and the European Union also to recognise the attacks as genocide.
One of the main reasons for suffering of the relatives is their rights were denied before. And at the time of the attack, especially the international community were turning a blind eyes on these crimes. And they were denying these crimes. So at the time, that the suffering was doubled, basically. So besides the physical suffering, there was the psychological suffering as well. And this recognition helps for reconciliation as well of our people with other components of the Iraq society.
The genocide included a chemical gas attack on Halabja town in 1988. About 5,000 people perished. The attack remains the largest single chemical weapons assault directed against a civilian populated area. The Anfal campaign of the late 1980s was a multi-stage attempt to eliminate Kurdish people and culture. Kurdish sources say 180,000 people were killed. Some 4,500 villages were destroyed and hundreds of thousands of people were forcibly displaced. Kurdistan's Barakhan Publishers is hosting events and seminars in London this summer to raise awareness of the genocide. Kurdish artists and doctors are participating in the project.
The genocide was enormous, and if you do anything for it, it is nothing, because it was so big. In front of the Kurdish society, we want to open an awareness-raising case for them and make our voices heard.
In 2007, the Supreme Iraqi Criminal Tribunal recognized the Halabja chemical attack and the Anfal campaign as genocide. In the same year, Iraq's Supreme Court decided to compensate victims of the Kurdish genocide. But there are reports that the Iraqi government avoids upholding the compensation laws. In 2008, Kurdistan's Anfal ministry demanded $8 billion in compensation for victims, but the Iraqi government rejected the demand. Iraq's parliament approved its own national budget of $100 billion earlier this year.
At the same time, there were other cases in Dujail in Iraq. After the Baas regime, the issue was raised and the case succeeded, and they got their compensation. But still, the Iraqi government has neglected this case. I expect they will neglect it completely and erase it.
Kurdistan's government says the problem stems directly from the compensation laws, which are not comprehensive enough. The laws apparently do not cover this genocide and have not been effective. Kurdistan's government has now prepared its own draft compensation law, which will be presented in Iraq's parliament.
But at the moment, we feel that at this time, the environment, political environment, is not quite ready or suitable. So we are waiting for a suitable time to take that law to Baghdad, and hopefully if we can achieve that one, then that to have a comprehensive compensation.
Kurdistan's government provides financial support for victims from its own pocket. The Anfal Ministry works with tens of thousands of genocide survivors. But victims in Garmian, which was the main target of the Anfal campaign, say Kurdistan's government has misunderstood their needs. They say support should extend beyond money and housing and should include psychological treatment.
In my opinion, these psychological problems will remain, like how the effects of the Second World War remain. This affects the future generation that did not see the disaster directly themselves. We should have a psychological investigation to reduce their problems.
So far, we haven't been able to provide that this is satisfactorily. One of the reasons we found is we have built some centers now for this treatment, but we haven't been able to find the expertise specialists to provide these services, because as a Kurds, all we suffered now, most of the Kurds, if you take, they have some sort of trauma as a result of this crime. So this is, we need to work on it more.
Halabja's Chemical Victims Society says Kurdistan's government has not finished a hospital it started building in 2007. The hospital is supposed to treat Halabja's 350 critical survivors who were exposed to chemical gas and still have chronic illnesses. The Halabja Society says the hospital was supposed to have been completed within 15 months, but 5 years later, they say 60% of the hospital has yet to be finished.
I can say that so many victims are waiting for this hospital, and many have lost their lives waiting.
The Supreme Iraqi Criminal Tribunal was established in 2005 to prosecute those who are accused of being involved in genocide and war crimes between 1968 and 2003. The tribunal previously decided to arrest 258 Kurdish people who helped Saddam Hussein's regime in the Anfal genocide. The arrest warrants were issued in 2010 and sent to the relevant authorities in the Kurdistan region. But still no Kurdish arrests have been made. Reports are that the court only detained, tried and sentenced the Arabs involved in the genocide. Officials say one of the reasons is because Iraq's government tried to close the tribunal last year on the pretext that the tribunal had completed its mission.
They managed to maintain the court, but the capacity was reduced, the court. And even after that, they neglected the work as well. They sent them to other places and there was no seriousness. Recently, we sent the team again to reactivate the court. So they are working on that. But from the Baghdad side, there is some, we feel there's not much seriousness on this, working on this as well.
It is widely reported in Kurdish media that some of those Kurds who helped Saddam Hussein implement the genocide now walk freely in Kurdish society and may even be working in the regional government.
Well, we asked, we said as a ministry, we have placed our worry about that. We sent a letter for confirming to work on this request, the legal request.
My husband died in Anfal and two sons, four brothers of my husband, four of my own brothers, nine nephews, one of my sisters with nine children and my cousins. How many of them? I don't know. So no one remains.
The Kurdish government says it has done its best to help the victims of the genocide, but local residents still harbour disappointment towards their leaders. The Halabja monument behind me serves as one reminder of the systematic campaign against the Kurds, a campaign which the world still knows very little about. Dale McEwen, Press TV, Halabja.
And that's it for this reporter's file. Remember to drop us a line and tell us what you think of this program, or if there is anything in your country or any other that you'd like us to cover. Our email address is reportersfile@presstv.ir. Until we meet again, happy Eid.